You're listening to a real piece of work. I probably shouldn't say it that way. You're listening to A Real Piece of Work, a jobs podcast for aspiring professionals brought to you by WVIK, Quad Cities NPR, and Junior Achievement of the Heartland. Now here's your host.
Mr. Blaylock, it's good to see you again, sir. Real excited about this program today, and in many ways, one of the main reasons for that, an 18-year-old, a now 17-year-old, and a 12-year-old, all of whom now have devices in their hands, and it feels like sometimes 24/7. I know that's not all that our guest is going to focus on and share with us today is how to navigate the digital world and devices, but I think it's super important as I've watched each of our children start to embrace those, and probably sometimes more than me or my wife would like. How about you? What's going on, bud?
Well, I mean, that's a great topic. I know we'll get into a lot of different things. But yeah, as far as screen time is concerned, you know, sometimes I worry about, am I mimicking the right behaviors as well? Because that phone is in my hand quite a bit, whether it be trying to run the business, trying to figure out is the younger one signed up for football camp, the podcast, and the list continues to go on and on. Not trying to get some sympathy from anybody here because we all have busy schedules, but you know, it makes me wonder, you know, am I mimicking the right behaviors? And you know, maybe there's something that that we could both learn today about setting the screens down a little bit, or just using them in the right way.
Love it, buddy. Well, Tiffany Wyckoff, you are a real piece of work, and we really appreciate you coming to support Junior Achievement of the Heartland here, our partners. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. It's great to be here. Thanks for having me, and I'm excited to have a conversation today. All about screens, of course.
Well, this is one of those great things, again, as worlds collide. My wife's best friend is an associate here, friend of Tiffany's, and it's great to make that connection point when we've got folks that literally could be sitting anywhere in the country or world that have come to a real piece of work. So, Tiffany, high school students, primary target audience, could you let them know what it means that you are the founder of Generation Remix and the co-founder of Your Way Learning?
Sure. It means that I decided to take a giant risk one day and hope for the best is really what it means. It means I had an idea and, you know, saw a problem, thought I could solve it, had an idea of how to do that, and decided to just take the first step and then take the next step and the next step after that. And it also means that I didn't get hired to do a specific job. I had to create my job. And I think that, you know, that's the scariest part when you're sitting like I was in a job where somebody else was my boss and somebody else was responsible for paying my salary and making sure that happened. You know, the thought of creating my own job and grabbing, you know, finding the resources to actually create a company, hire people, and be the person responsible for making sure, you know, the metaphorical roof is over all of our heads. You know, that's really what being a founder is. And yeah, it's taking full responsibility of the idea and believing in that idea enough every single day to stay with it.
That leap, I'm sure, is not easy. Matt's done it. I've done it. I didn't do it well. I'm curious. I'm curious. Could you again just frame for our listeners what specifically is Generation Remix and what service does it provide? And then also Your Way of Learning.
Yeah. So the first time I became a founder was for Your Way Learning, which was called Link at the time. And what it meant was we were going to help schools implement technology. And there was a lot of confusion because devices were hitting the classroom. This is like, you know, around 20, I would say from 2010 to 2015, there was a lot of digital adoption happening at the earlier stages. So this is way before COVID. People were really confused on how to adjust their teaching, what to do with the devices. So we thought, you know, it wasn't fair to teachers that all these things were hitting their classroom and they just didn't have any support for how to use it in the right way. I had had access to technology as a teacher in my classroom, and I found that I could really use it in a way that engaged my students. I really liked working with teenagers and the, like, especially kind of the rebellious ones, because they had really interesting ideas, but it was unacceptable for me for anyone to punch out of my class and to just be disruptive or be bored. So I just used technology a lot early in like the late 90s. So we started Your Way really to help teachers figure out how to do that and really see the potential of it in their classrooms. So we were offering services for professional development, workshops, coaching, strategic planning for schools to help them figure it out. At the same time, we knew we wanted to have a tech solution because we were all about scalability, which you need to have if you are a company with investment from investors who are venture oriented and want to see, big returns on that investment. So we started building that platform, created a teacher professional development platform, and we had a lot of use of it during that era and through COVID. And then, it was really difficult to sustain that momentum because people got kind of allergic to doing online things after COVID. They were just like, I don't want to do online, PD anymore. We also pivoted because we realized that if our tech didn't have AI in it, we were going to die. We're like, there's no way. The writing is on the wall. So as soon as OpenAI released its model and ChatGPT became this massive viral thing, we were already working really hard to basically create a new platform, which is what Your Way Learning became, that put the power of AI behind teacher planning so that their instruction could be more effective. And then I started Generation Remix after, because I had this big aha moment where I was walking around schools in, 2010, and not every kid had a phone. Kids just didn't have the stuff yet. They didn't have their own laptops. They didn't have iPads. Like, it was all very early. And so the only time that maybe they used something digital would maybe in the classroom. And in 2023, that was not the case. 2023, everybody was saturated 24/7, like you said, with their, the world in their pocket and all of the digital entertainment and social media that you could access during the day. They were going home, kids were going home, and they were doing everything on technology for school. Then they were using their phones, and we were starting to see the really big impact of that on their mental health and their well-being. And even though we had always talked about balance in the work with schools, it felt like a wake-up call that I needed to hit it head on. So I started Generation Remix to tackle that issue of just the screen time, the impact on mental well-being, and to do it in a way that was empowering to youth. And I had this idea of, I don't know what it's like to grow up, with all this stuff, but the kids do. So why don't I go find these awesome kids? I'll bring them in. I'll create a structure to get their ideas onto the whiteboard and help them build entrepreneurial skills to get them out into the world. And we'll just throw all of the operational weight of the organization behind their ideas so that they can lead a kid-to-kid movement towards digital wellness.
So what is a... What does a typical day and week look like then between Your Way Learning and Generation Remix? Are they far enough along that I guess there's certain things that are just in momentum and you get to check in? Or is this literally day to day, hands on, Tiffany's in the room for both and requires full time attention?
No, I am no longer working on Your Way Learning full time. That was definitely my full time life for several years. And we did move it further, like far enough along. And we were at an inflection point where we were thinking about a lot of growth. There was a very competitive environment. landscape evolving in the AI for education space. And so we reorganized our entire structure to get ready for that moment. And I took that opportunity to step out of my full-time role and start Generation Remix. And so I have been now working on Generation Remix full-time for the last year and a half. And gosh, what does it look like day to day? Every day I think about what is the one thing I can do today to just move the ball down the field and get closer to my goals. That's really what I'm trying to do every day. Like, what's the most important thing? And then I put some structure around that to say, well, what am I trying to accomplish this year? So I use, it's a system called the Entrepreneurial Operating System, EOS. We used it at Your Way Learning. I was the integrator, so I was running it. I use that as a way of strategic planning. So that means once a year, and I do it by myself. So it's really fun. I'm like, hey, Tiffany, do you think this is a good idea for our annual goal this year? And it's like, oh my gosh, girl, that is an amazing idea. You know, it is, let me tell you, it is riveting. So like, all right. So me, myself, and I, and my AI, by the way, is my very real coworker these days. You know, we make some goals. They're big goals and they have clear outcomes, smart goals, to say, all right, this year I'm really focused on getting a couple new institutional funders, because one of my main jobs as a founder for Generation Remix is bringing in donations from different foundations or grants or individuals. So that's for an example of a big goal that I have this year. I have a target revenue. And so I have that annual plan, and then I break it into quarters, kind of like your report card. I'm like, what kind of grade do I want to get on my report card for this quarter? And how do I know I got an A? And I always want A's, by the way. So, you know, and then I make my sticky notes every week. Like, I'll show you mine. I made it yesterday. It's kind of all the stuff. And it does say on their podcast, but that's, and I try to check it off. Right. I'm the only person accountable for this idea right now. I'm the only full-time, person working on it. And I have a lot of kids right now that I'm working with. So it's an internship model, and I'm bringing kids in left and right. I'm giving them some training. I have like 60 kids right now that are in my network of remixers. So we're building an app to organize all their leadership actions and the stuff that they're creating. And so programmatically, I'm like, okay, what does the program need to help these kids stay active, stay engaged, do the work, feel rewarded for their insight as digital natives and valued, right? How do we compensate them? So those are the like programmatic big things I'm trying to solve. Then I'm trying to solve, how are we telling our story? What do I need to do for communications this week? Because I don't have a communications person, right? Actually just hired an intern. So yeah, so now I've got someone I'm working with. And then what do we need to do to, you know, for revenue? Had somebody tell me once, and it's true for for-profits and nonprofits, if you don't have revenue, you don't have a business. That's what being an entrepreneur is. So even though nonprofits aren't making a profit, they still have to have revenue to cover the expenses. So I'm always just trying to figure that out day to day. But I will also say, I think the way you start your day is very important. And I start my day with either cold plunging or exercise and meditation and coffee, which is my favorite time of the day. It's like a special thing. I don't do my first coffee at work because it ruins it. You know, got to make it special. And I make my bed because that's the first victory. I'm like, all right, I'm already winning if I've done those things. So things can go wrong today. I could not get that grant, you know. I might biff on the presentation, but I've made my bed and I've been in the cold water. So calling it a victory.
I'm smiling because there's a famous, I think it was a graduation ceremony where a general is up on stage. Yes. And it did impact me. I wasn't, this is getting a little personal. I wasn't much of a bed maker in my life. And what do you know?
Right.
I am making beds now, and it does feel good. I 100% get what you mean. My wife is 100% a morning workout person. I'm an afternoon guy, but I like your routine. So I appreciate you unpacking that.
It was a lot of information that I just gave you, but you know, you're like, what's your day look like? I'm like, all right, here we go.
No, I love it. Getting to good habits is helpful. And
I make sure to take a full coffee break with my AI too, midway through the day. Cause that guy needs a break too.
Tiffany, do you watch the show? I can't believe I'm asking this. Anybody watch Scarpetta on Netflix? I think it is.
Oh, I don't.
I haven't seen it.
It's a Nicole Kidman show, and there's a very fascinating AI topic that is a theme throughout the show. But that's one of the most, I guess, tangents that we've ever had as we've interviewed somebody today.
Okay, well, watch those of you listening, watch the graduation speech with the general on how to make your bed, and go watch the Netflix show. I will add it to my watch list.
There you go. I'm very, very curious with the Generation Remix. Did I hear you right that you're matching student to student?
Yes. Well, it's peer to peer.
Peer to peer.
So basically kids are coming in. They create, for example, they created a really powerful workshop that is led by teens for other youth. So sometimes it's younger youth in like fifth grade or middle school. And you can't imagine the power of, you know, the high school junior who, you know, does the thing, is in the band or is playing soccer, and he's walking into the middle school, often where he went to school, and is like, hey, I've been where you are right now at 12, and having, maybe you're getting your first phone or you're not sure, like, should you get on Snap? Here's what I'm here to tell you. This stuff impacts your mental health. Here are the stats. Here's how it impacted me personally. Here's why I got off, you know, X or Y tech, and how I'm keeping my side of the street clean right now with my tech. I'm not sleeping with it in my room. You know, that was a real change for me. I'm not checking my phone between classes. I was one of our team leaders said that the other day, and she's like, it's amazing how many people you actually see and say hi to when you look up in the hall. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's all that kind of peer-to-peer work, starting clubs, running workshops, running detox challenges. We have a workshop we're doing tomorrow night in a community, which is parents and kids, because to your point, Mr. Blaylock, we have parents who can't put down their phones, right? So it's a problem for everyone. It just impacts, you know, kids a lot.
So what kind of newer innovative ideas do you see when it's youth led versus maybe like classroom led, where it's like, hey, put your phone in the lockbox before we start today? And what does youth led digital well-being kind of mean in practice, and how is it different than maybe the authoritative thou shall not take phone out during class?
Sure. Sure. Okay. Well, I'll start with culture, because the culture and power, it's just very different, right? So you're almost anything you do that is from a kid to another kid is going to be more influential than if you have an adult talking about this specific topic. And part of that is there is a level of credibility and understanding what it's like, which we simply cannot have because we're not digital natives. So we didn't know we didn't have to figure out how to be an online self and an offline self at the same time, and to form those identities in tandem, to have friends that you may consider really close that are only in your online world. So just that in and of itself, separate from the social dynamics that normally exist between adults and kids versus kid to kid, you're just starting with a different playing field of influence that is really powerful and compelling. And the programmatic or structural, you know, way that looks different is you have lived experience coming out as advice. So I ask the kids, what do you wish you could go back and tell your younger self about how to manage this whole stuff, so that all the stuff so you can be safe and healthy online? And they each have a unique answer. And those kids sitting out in the audience, whatever it is, a classroom or what have you, they're hearing that and someone's thinking, oh, that's real for me too. I can relate to that. And that point of relation and connection is what drives a change in behavior. It's the connection. It's not necessarily the information. So if we, and that's true for anything, by the way, when we were doing Your Way work, we always talked about connection before content, because at the end of the day, what moves people isn't often, it's not usually the information. You know, so kids are sharing tips. They're saying, hey, this is what I'm trying. This is what you can try. Maybe that's in a classroom setting where somebody's invited them to come in. Maybe it's in their clubs where they're running a, you know, challenges within their school. They're handing out bingo cards and saying, hey, we created this bingo challenge. You know, you should do it and you can gain points. And then we're going to raffle off a prize. You know, they're running announcements. They come in as they go through an internship process of getting trained up. So they're gaining really high value skills in a, honestly, in a time where they're pretty intimidated by the road ahead on their career paths. So they're looking out. They're, think about what's out there in the spheres right now. You're hearing like, oh, AI is going to take all the jobs. And it's not even that false, right? You're like, well, it's not going to take all of them. There's going to be new jobs. But at the same time, there are a lot of stories and they don't know what is safe anymore, because computer programming used to be the thing. It's being disrupted. You know, there's just, everything's being upended. So they come in and they're learning, how do I speak with confidence? How do I build relationships that matter and network so that I can create the change I want to see, whether it's for me personally or whether it's for, in our case, positive impact in their community. How do I go through the design thinking process when I have an idea and get better information about the community and the humans that it's serving and make it the best version of my idea possible? So that's the experience of a remixer leader. And then that peer-to-peer work that they're out there doing, it's just anywhere they can find an opportunity to have a conversation and to have influence. Also, by the way, I want to say I'm not opposed to schools taking action to protect kids' time during the day with the pouches or with, you know, their policies about phone-free schools. I think phone schools have a responsibility in the mix to do their part. It just lands very different. And it also lands differently if a student committee or club within the school is part of the stakeholder group making those decisions and structuring that policy, which is often overlooked.
So have you seen examples of school districts where that integration of different stakeholders, students, faculty, parents, all are sitting in a role and have come up with or policies that you've seen some just great successes?
I mean, it's messy every time. So it's not great. How do you measure great success? I think great success in this case is you get past the very challenging window of change, which for some schools is 2 weeks. That was one school that I, you know, I'm on the board of an independent school. They said it was 2 weeks. That was awful. And then the rest was bliss. Right? You got past the noise and people settled in. They started to reap the benefits and they're like, you know what? This is fine. And it also became the new norm very quickly. For larger districts, they're trying really hard to bring in, you know, the consultants, the policy, and the students. New York City, who we did a lot of work with, they had a lot of labs where they were bringing student voice together and they were having design sessions with them and policy sessions with them in partnership with other stakeholders who were the leaders, and making a real effort to include it. And then I've seen examples where the students weren't really included at all. And that usually takes, it's just a longer, messy transition period because people are switching from a pretty strong social norm to a completely different social norm that was forced upon them. I've also seen you know, I understand like schools just want to rip the Band-Aid and say like, look, for every kid in high school, this is going to be the new thing. But it's very different for, it should be developmentally different for a ninth grader who's coming in versus a senior who's about to graduate. And that's not often considered either, that developmental, you know, ages and stages require different approaches and different level of agency for kids to really not just be protected and focused during school, but also to develop the self-awareness tools that they really need to have a healthy relationship with technology over time.
I love this explanation you just gave us there, and it makes a lot of sense. And I just keep on seeing my kids in my head as you're talking to us here. The curiosity that I'm going to circle back a little bit to is an insert sarcasm. I'm assuming your personal education prepared you for being an entrepreneur and launching a couple organizations, a not-for-profit and a for-profit. That's safe to assume? And if so, what's that education?
Is that safe to assume? Sarcasm inserted. Okay, I'll tell you. So I studied education when I was in undergrad, and I never felt so betrayed as the first day I was teaching, and or the first week, and I was like, I have no idea how to do this job. Whoever thought I could do this job? What did I just learn for 4 years? This is ridiculous. I want my money back. You know, it's just like the most absurd reality. Yeah. So I did not feel prepared to be a teacher. I thankfully had the skills to figure it out, or the karma. I always told my dad I would never be a teacher because he was a teacher. And I thought he spent way too much time grading papers and being cranky at me because he spent his like patience on his teenagers at school. So of course I became a teacher because that's what mm-hmm. happens when you say those things. So I didn't feel prepared for that job. But I learned how to do it. I'm a very learn by doing person anyway. I don't know if it's possible. I did go back to business school eventually. I have two master's degrees. One's in educational leadership. And I will say being a school leader is, it's very similar to being an entrepreneur. Even if you don't start the school, there are a lot of overlap skills that you have to learn in order to be a successful school leader. So I did have a lot of years where I was doing something that did prepare me. Then I went back and I did a business degree, and I actually, my project is what in some version turned into Your Way Learning. So I did have some more support. And an excellent mentor when I was at Columbia doing that program.
Are there certain aspects of education that you're still aspiring to dive into in terms of helping prepare you personally and help you continue to grow? You mentioned mentor. Maybe that's one of the aspects of education that we all need to embrace.
I think relationships are very important, and investing in relationships that are, people who can mentor you and people who you can mentor, even if it's a peer. I've done a lot of that, and definitely believe in return on investment, and that you get a lot out of it over time, especially if you're good about following up with people. I guess in terms of my own education, what do I wish I understood? I mean, I do wish that I had more product development knowledge. I've been the product owner of a few products, and now I'm creating things left and right with agentic coding, which is vibe coding using AI. I don't even have to code at all, but I'm not as good even with those tools as I would like to be, because I don't have the foundation of software development and coding. And I've always been sort of adjacent to it and a techie, non-technical person. And I do wish that I had filled that gap. And maybe I will at some point. But I doubt I will, because now AI is getting really good at it. So
thank you for that, X. Thank you very much for that. Just awareness and opportunity to, I guess, continue to learn. We all have something. And sometimes you end up outsourcing things too, because maybe there's just not a passion for it, and that's okay. Absolutely. Tell me, Matt. Well, Matt, I'm jumping, but anything that's circling in your head right now that you're wanting to jump on?
Oh, I just what resonated with me there is the idea of a foundation, right? And so my day job is not being a co-host of this podcast. It's in the marketing world. And, you know, I've had the great opportunity to be able to have a foundation before we had AI that in a lot of ways helps enhance your abilities, but in some ways slows you down. You can get into the swirl there. But I think that's one of the advantages that we've had in pre-AI is that we've had the ability to build the foundation. So I think I just encourage everybody. Yeah, you got to build the foundation and then find tools to help you enhance your foundation.
Yeah, I think it's something that's very challenging that we are placing on kids right now, is to protect that ability to build the foundation, because every day they have an opportunity not to build. They have the opportunity to take the easy way and to use AI tools to replace their thinking. And I have to say, I'm very inspired by all the conversations I have with young people about the way that they're really intentional. We were on a panel. We Generation Remix was part of a panel at the Stanford Responsible AI and Youth Wellbeing Conference. And they asked our panelists, what are you doing to protect your critical thinking? And one of the kids said, every time I use AI to brainstorm, I ask it, what percentage of my idea is represented in response? Mm. How much is me and how much is you? And I was like, wow, that is some metacognitive awareness and tool building if I've ever heard it. Yeah. And I was really impressed. And I also was a little like, God, that's a lot to place on a kid to be that aware. In order to ask the AI not to help them too much. And another kid said, the line is so thin between AI impacting my critical thinking foundation and it not, that often I don't know if I've crossed it until it's too late. And I still don't know if I've crossed it in some ways. And I thought that was really profound, because every day we are asking kids to make that decision multiple times a day before their decision-making part of the brain is fully developed, and also looking at a future that we don't even know what skills are going to be valued. The reality today is we don't know what skills are going to be the premium skills of tomorrow. So how do you even know what to protect? It's really complicated.
So in that vein, and how do our educators, that many of whom aren't practitioners, they haven't come from the post high school world, how are they preparing to even walk into a classroom and teach? What can they do?
Yeah. It's such a good question. Actually, a teacher asked me that literally in New York several years ago. She's like, I feel right after chat came out, she's like, I just feel like I don't even know how to do my job anymore. What do I do? Yeah. And I think that it's comforting to understand that, and this is teachers that I talk to about this also agree, that teaching is not about information. And if you see it about information transfer to the student and then assessing it from the student, it's a very limited experience that almost anything can do, right? That's a place where technology can shine. The relationship is the center of real teaching. And so the more we invest in the human-only skills, relational intelligence, assessments that bring out the human, right? So if I were teaching right now, which in many ways I am working with these teenagers in Generation Remix, I'm like, I'm not going to give them something that they can just go throw into chat. Instead, I'm going to say, hey, look, what do you think about this AI thing? For example, this was one of the design challenges we tackled. And they brainstormed some ideas in real time out loud, you know, in sticky notes, talking, you know, those like very interactive experiences that are in the moment, because critical thinking in the moment is something that is really important to preserve, and problem solving that involves paying attention to eye contact and expressions and the humanness that's in the room, people getting angry, et cetera. And then once they had their ideas out and were brainstorming how to do it, then I said, hey, we should use AI to enhance this idea. You guys are coming up with all, they came up with this idea. They wanted to create a choose your own adventure style game where you're making choices in AI and throughout your life. And then you end up in like a really problematic corner or like a kind of problematic corner, a super awesome corner, or like, you know, this other corner where you just live in the woods. I don't know. And they were coming up with all the scenarios. And I said, this is actually a great use case of AI now, to create more and more scenarios now that you've got the frame. So I think if I were a teacher, I would be structuring my learning experiences and assessment experiences around what kids can do to enhance their relationships, enhance their own creative thinking, and express their ideas, right? And so that looks different than, you know, writing a paper at home, right? Maybe you're like writing it out in class, and or you're giving a speech, or you're having a debate. It's just all of those assessments that are a little bit different than your conventional ones.
I love it. Well, that's still not easy. There's a lot on teachers' plates. I don't envy them, but I also don't envy the students that are under the magnet of social media and devices. Unlike I didn't have to deal with it. I know Mr. Blaylock didn't have to deal with it as a student. So it's a challenge. And so, Matt, what else you got?
Wait, can I say one more thing about teachers?
Please.
Yeah,
please.
Okay. I didn't say this, and I think it's important. Teachers are trying really hard right now, and they're getting a lot right. So I like that you said there's a lot on their plate, and they're doing a lot of really cool stuff to innovate in this moment, in this, you know, tech 3.0 moment. So, you know, I just think like, just trust the relationships and keep going. And thank you for doing what you're doing.
Exactly. Matt, what else?
Tiffany, I guess maybe a question then, as we're talking about, you know, we've talked about students, we've brought in some parent perspectives here, and also the teacher perspective. I mean, what kind of things can Generation Remix do to help an educator? If we've got some educators, you know, in our local area here that are like, wow, this is kind of resonating. Like what does Generation Remix offer for teachers specifically?
Yeah. So, I mean, we have a lot of free resources. All of our resources that the youth have created that are designed to be by youth for youth are open. So happy to send teachers some of those resources on our website, generationremix.org. You can follow us on socials, generation_remix. Happy to have people reach out, and I can mail all the things, the stickers, the bingo cards, like, oh, just all the things, start a club. So that's one thing. We also offer trainings for how, you know, for youth that want to then lead the trainings within their school. So that everything's train the trainer style. So we'll say, hey, you want to do this workshop, you know, sign up for a training, and you can do that.
Is there a specific student organization within schools that you tend to see adopt the Generation Remix approach and then help drive that into the schools? So should we, you know, is it student governments or
yeah.
Who listening might be that person to help drive it from a student perspective?
Sure. That's a great question, by the way. Sounds like you've worked in schools. So a lot of schools have a leadership or peer resource core, like class, that teachers are teaching, and the whole objective is to have teachers, you know, help students lead within the school. So those teachers are often very interested. Your student governments, sure. Any leadership club is actually like if they're looking for something to do to be leaders in the community and they want to touch on this specific topic, you don't have to start a Generation Remix club. You can run it through that existing leadership club that's already active and doing really good work in the school. And then I think having college counselors and advisors be aware of Generation Remix as an opportunity for kids to develop their profile as leaders, I think is a really great that we've seen a lot of traction through that path. And then finally, a lot of schools have advisories or it's kind of like whole child classes where they're trying to work on the rounding out the academic experience. And that's a lot of times where kids will go present through advisory classes in their schools.
Awesome. Well, Tiffany, anything else that whether it's our students or educators or parents that you'd like to leave with them before we go to our typical closing question?
Oof.
That's a very, very broad.
You know, I think right now the world feels, so I made a deal with myself when I started Generation Remix. And by the way, I think if you become a founder, you have to make your deals with yourself. You have to say, I'm going to do it if this is the condition. What is the condition for the success? And one of mine was I wanted to have it be joyful. And I think that's very important to, and you can make that commitment to say, I'm going to do this and I'm going to do it in a way that not only is joyful for me, it doesn't mean that it's not hard sometimes. It's hard sometimes. Sometimes I cry if I don't get a grant, whatever, you know, but it's also a good exercise of how can I approach each task in a way that not only creates joy in the experience of doing it, but also joy for others. So for the kids that I'm working with. So I think that anytime we can lean into joy, it's worth doing in whatever we're doing, and to find the joy and fun in what we're doing is to me a very worthwhile goal. The kids came up with during our summer innovation lab last year, they came up with our mantra. You know, we were doing the thing where we're like, what are our values as a team? What do we want to commit to together? And one of the kids threw out, lock in, have fun. I'm like, yeah, I mean, obviously, that's it. We don't need any others. Done. Lock in, have fun. Great. Let's go. So
I love it.
That's what I'll leave.
Well, I appreciate that. And unless Mr. Blaylock has anything else, I'd like to pivot over here to our typical last question for our guest.
Lock in and have fun, Matt. Let's do it.
All right, buddy. Miss Tiffany, stare back at yourself as a 16-year-old, if you don't mind. And what would you tell Tiffany to keep doing, stop doing, and start doing to increase, you know, the chances for more happiness and success in your life?
All right, keep doing. Little Tiff, I would say keep being a little rebellious and independent in your thinking. I think I went into like people pleasing. I don't know how it happened. I went from being this like kind of rebellious kid and like independent thinker to like, how can I do this the best way possible to earn my brownie points? So I would say, don't worry about that as much. Stick with it, you know, stop doing. I think I made some assumptions when I was young about the things that were possible or not possible in my life and my career. So I love dancing, for example, love dancing. And I just assumed that at some point I would just have to stop doing that to do other things that were adultish, right? I had to start adulting, so I couldn't dance anymore. And I would say, stop doing that thing where you're assuming that you can't do the things you love to do in some way and make it work for your life. It doesn't mean you have to do it full time, but you can find a place for it. So stop making assumptions that aren't true. And then start doing, I think I would invest in relationships more. So start investing in some relationships that you can maintain and really nurture over time. And not because you have to, but because the relationship has potential to be high quality. not transactional, but like an actual good relationship over time, and follow up with those people so that you can create the conditions and relationships to help each other over the course of your career.
Well, Tiffany, you are a real piece of work. We appreciate you supporting Junior Achievement of the Heartland and all the students out there and listeners out there that are taking this episode in. We appreciate your time. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thanks for making the beginning of my day another win. It's 9:30 and I've made my bed. I've done some exercise. I've had a podcast. I mean, we are killing it, people.
Go get yourself a special coffee now, Tiffany.
Thank you. Have a good rest of your day, too.
You too.
Mr. Cerebro, what a great, great guest and podcast today. You know, I continue to learn a ton through these interactions with our guests. You know, it's not just for our audience. I think it's for us as the hosts. And what really struck me about Tiffany's background was not just where she's at today, but maybe her path to get there. You know, like at first she's a classroom in classrooms and in school leadership, and then she's like, hey, let's go into the ed tech founder piece, and then you know comes back into kind of being a tech ethicist. And a nonprofit leader. So, I mean, I think it just exemplifies that, you know, where you start in your career is not where you're going to end, and try different things and have fun. What'd you get out of today's podcast?
Oh man. It's just, again, it's one of those, we're very fortunate that we've been having some guests that, kind of help hit home that, you know, as two dads continue trying to figure it out, that there's a lot of resources out there, but Tiffany specific, what I loved hearing is that, you know, the relationships are what's most important is the essence of teaching. So we can be concerned about AI taking over to a certain extent and maybe not helping with that critical thinking. But I'm thinking of Dominic and like our mild the son and like Miss Brown at Pleasant Valley High School changed his perspective on education, why it matters. Don't be lazy, lean in and actually do the work. And so she's doing great stuff here. And the other thing I thought was great, no matter what you do, hopefully it's joyful. You know, we spend too much time working not to enjoy it with the people you're with, the company you're with. And if you're not enjoying it, do yourself and your employer a favor and find something else that's a better match. It'll be better for everyone long term. Maybe sometimes, Mr. Blaylock, that means hanging your own shingle out like you and or Tiffany has done and seeing what that journey looks like. So once again, another awesome interview. Looking forward to another opportunity to do this with you, Mr. Blaylock.
Sounds good, Mr. Rebro. You, sir, are a real piece of work.
Thank you, sir. You too.